Because we're going to be going in a little bit more today. What is today? Hashabihi. All right. Tell you the truth. This is an Ashkenazi word. And it does mean seventh. Doesn't mean the letter seven or the number seven. It means seventh day. The seventh. Okay? Now, I gave you a little bit of advance where we're going today, right? And today is what day? 21st day. Crossed the sea. Remember last week? It was 2 days ago. I told you, we'll read it again so you have a picture. That there was by day and by night, by day and by night. And they were at the edge of, where the edge of what? What was the edge of what? Wilderness. What was the edge called? Yeah. It's Etham or Etam, whether it's, you want to go Ashkenazi or Sephardic. So just a brief summary. This is very important. I think it's very important that we kind of keep up with where we're going by remembering what was said. All right? You don't have to turn here because we said it last week, but it's to sanctify unto me all the firstborn, whosoever opens the womb among the children of Israel, both man and beast, it is mine. Okay, let me ask you a question. Why the firstborn? Firstborn male. We'll get to that and I'll prove it to you later on. It is a firstborn male. Okay, well, one that says symbolic of Messiah. Who else might think it means? It's quite a common phrase, right? Now, firstborn is a little bit different than the first fruits. The first fruits, what I told you 2 days ago that you were what? Kazir. You are the Kazir. All right? You are the harvest. All right? An Reshit, the first of the heart or the harvest, not really the very first, but the first one that you raise up and give it to the Creator of heaven and earth is referring to Messiah. And I went to the book of Corinthians and showing you that word that was used in Greek in its first fruits. And lo and behold, he was referring to way back in Exodus, what that was all about, or actually not Leviticus, and that first fruit was referring to, of course, the Messiah. It's kind of simple understanding those, right? Basic fundamental things of what it is. Before we go into explanation of this thing, he said, remember this day which you came out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage, for by strength of a hand, Yahuwah brought you out of the place. There should be no leavened bread and be eaten. Now, I mentioned Shabbat, the 17th, that God brought them out in a rank file, right? In orderly conduct, in a series of bodies of five, not bodies, basically it's five units of all the house of Israel. They didn't run, they didn't flee, they weren't scared to death. They left with the what? By a strong and a high hand. Alright, so I know that I mentioned this last time and I'll do it again. We have a picture sometimes because Hollywood likes to make it more dramatic than what it really is. If they'd really shown them walking and marching out in orderly fashion, it would have given you and me an entirely different picture. It would have shown you and me that the power and the strength of God's hand was very, very present. All right? But that has been. As we come to this point, we'll come to it later on today, you will see when they cross this sea. I want you to pay attention very, very carefully what is written. they did not run for their lives at all. They walked on dry land. They didn't run. They didn't flee. They weren't falling all over the place, see if someone could get ahead of somebody else. They were in an orderly fashion. That tells you the strength of God, doesn't it? We'll get to there later. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and the seventh day shall be a feast unto Yahuwah. Thou shalt set apart unto Yahuwah all that open the womb, every firstling that is a male, that you shall come and that has coming in the breast. This is in Exodus, the 13th chapter, verse 12. And it came to pass, verse 17 of Exodus 13, verse 15. And it came to pass that when Pharaoh could hardly let us go, that Yahuwah slew all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both firstborn of man and firstborn of beast. Therefore I sanctify unto Yahuwah all that open the womb, being males, and all the firstborn of my sons. Okay. Oh, the firstborn of Egypt is a representation of the Messiah? What? Is that what it says? Okay, you people have been in my class for many years. I know you know the answer. You just forgot it. Okay? Have you ever heard of a chapter named, book named, what was it? Just a minute, let me find it. Genesis! Yeah, okay. Remember Genesis? Yeah, well, I used to say Bereshit. You know, maybe you got confused between the two words. And now, we go to there, and it gives a definition of what the firstborn is. All right? And it's in verse 3 of the 49th chapter. Reuben, thou art my firstborn, my might, my beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity, and the excellency of power. Oh, wow. What happened to Egypt's firstborn? They all died. God took away their excellency. He took away their strength. He took away those things from them. Now, you understand about the firstborn? So when you look and you say he killed the firstborn of Egypt and all of the animals. Now, the reason why it's the firstborn of the animals, because it's the same exact identical picture. It is the strength. When you use the Hebrew phrase ben, meaning son, it means the beginning or the strength of the father. Not the strength of the mother, the strength of the father. So we get this firstborn, and we get a picture in our minds, and we say, okay, now we got a picture. Now, back again here, what did we say? Sanctify unto me all the firstborn, whosoever opened the womb among the children of Israel. So the firstborn of Israel, when were they sanctified?
When were they sanctified? When were they sanctified? When they went to the Red Sea.
What? Before that. When before that? After Passover.
Okay.
They were sanctified on the 15th day. Okay, follow where I'm at. Am I lost with anybody this? It's just what it says. So if what it says, we have to figure out, what does it mean? What's it referring to? So we will find out as we go along today, I hope. It's very important that we kind of get a picture of setting a group of firstborn aside. Why the firstborn? Because they are what? Oh, do I go back there again?
The power and the strength.
They are the might.
Of
They are the beginning, the reshit of strength. They are the excellency of dignity. They are the excellency of power. That's what the firstborn is. That's what they are. And that's what they are to become. And every firstborn male, you say, wow, did I ever meet up with that? No. How do I do this? Every firstborn male has to say to themselves, okay, God, creator of heaven and earth, how do I accomplish that? Well, we hope we'll see when we reach a very important day as we go on this journey to where? Where are we going? Where? Ten Commandments. Ten Commandments. This is the journey of the Ten Commandments, right? Okay. I told you, you are the... When you pick the harvest off the field, what do you do with the grain?
Gather it in.
Where do you take it? To the threshing floor. That's where you and I in the house of Israel is going. The threshing floor. All right? Now what do you do in a threshing floor? Something peels off, something is pouring a meat out of you, if I can use that terminology, right? Bam, 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 bam. And then what comes, and you do what? You pick it up and you throw it in the air. What? What happens then?
The shaft.
Okay? All right. You see the analogy of everything that's taking place here? When we talk about wheat, we talk about the barley, we talk about any of these things, God's talking about us. When we are to be unleavened, we are to be the grain that's inside of that hull. And when he finishes knocking off the leaven, we will have nothing but truth before us. Nothing's covering us up. You got a picture here so far? So when we talk about these feast days, this feast day, these period of feast days, is really about a harvest. When does a harvest when is a harvest completed?
Right.
When all is gathered in.
We will be all finished the harvesting on
Pentecost.
There you go. We're going to see a physical thing that takes place on as we journey to the tent. When you see what is physical, what does it tell you what God is trying to do and show us and teach us? He's teaching us how he thinks, what he's going to do, and how he's going to do it. We're not left in the dark. We are to be the children of what? Yeah, not the children of Hoshet. We are to be children of light. How are you going to become children of light? The other part is missing here. Let truth become in you. Let you have powerful truth, nothing but truth, and increase and you grow in grace and knowledge. Alright? Yes, it's the days of unleavened bread. It is a day of truth. Day of sincerity or time. This is still a day of sincerity and truth. You get this picture? All right. Now, let's go back to Exodus. We'll go to the 14th chapter here. Oh, before we go there, I want to tell you how come they got so fast down to this. Well, I wish I had a map. I meant to see if I can find a big map. I'm not a good drawer. I look at a big map, but I can't big map. God willing, I'll see if I can't buy a big map. I'll hang it up. Right up there. And they took their journey from Sukkot and a catch at Etham, which is on the edge of the wilderness. And Yahuwah went before them by day in a pillar of cloud and led them by the way, and by night a pillar of fire to give them light that they might go by day and by night. They didn't stop. We talked about that last Sabbath, right? They kept going and kept going and kept going. Let me ask you, how hard has it been for the days of unleavened bread for you? What are you going to do? Keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going. Bread of affliction! Keep going, keep going, keep going. I mean, really, honestly, ask yourself deep down inside, is eating unleavened bread really afflicting me? I might have it up. I might have bowel movement problem. You know, it's not going to go away. But when you take in these days, 7 days of truth. Oh, wait a minute. 7 days of truth. Is that 7 days of bitterness? Well, yes, it is. You know what you have to do when you take in truth? I told you on the 17th. Yeah, 17. You must do something. You know, when you take in the truth of the living God by what is written, and you have inside of you an untruth, what must you do? And I will tell you, many of you sitting here in this room, I know you've had a hard time getting rid of the untruth. You've had friends, relatives, family members, then when you start walking this direction, you say, I can't do it, I have to do it, I can't do this anymore. Three or four of you people came up to me concerning about Easter. And you said, this is hard. Yeah, make a decision. I didn't tell them what to do. You're going to hurt people, yeah? It's going to hurt them. It's also going to hurt you. It's also going to hurt you. Because they will depart from you. Oh, is that hard? Every one of you in this room have known when you've done that, what happened? You've lost. You actually lost more friends and more relatives than you ever had before. They're gone. Now, Jesus comes on the scene. He says, if you follow me, you'll have many more fathers and mothers and brothers and sisters. Okay. You is my father, my mother, but you're related to me. Next question. Don't answer it out loud, of course, please. Next question is this. And it will help you know where we're going. How many of you internally believe that the Creator of heaven and earth is connected with you? That He really and truly is your Father? Okay? My question is this. What's it like being related to the Creator of heaven and earth? What's it like? No, if you're related to Him, wow. However, what's happening here? I am there. You're there. We're all there. We're all related to Him. And, by the way, he's got a son, you know, what was his name? Yeshua, right? Yeah, oh yeah, him, yeah. By the way, did you related to him too? How's your brother? What's he like? See, all of you can answer those questions, can't you? You know you can answer those questions. So now, we're coming here, we're going to see by day and by night, the pillar, the pillar, the pillar. Crossing of the Red Sea. Kind of interesting picture, isn't it? Kind of small, but as far as the Red Sea is concerned, but it kind of gives you a little bit of picture, right? Nice blue water. A little bit complicated to put in fish and all that kind of stuff. They left it out. Understandable. But on dry land, they walk on dry land, crossing the Red Sea. Verse 1 of Exodus, chapter 14. Speak of the children of Israel, that they will turn back and encamp before Pi-Hahiroth. Pi-Hahiroth means nothing more than a gully, or it's where two rivers have come together and has dried up. It's like a delta of two rivers, and it was quite an open space. Between Megiddo, that means a higher place, off from the sea, and the sea itself before the face of, or before, Baal Shephon. Baal Shephon has two meanings. Meaning of winter, and the meaning of the north, or the Lord of the North. The Lord of the winters, and the Lord of the North. Interesting phrases, aren't they? Now, he wanted them to face toward that particular, and it was the name of a mountain, by the way. Name of a physical mountain was that. It was a high mountain, very high mountain. Lord of the North. Interesting word, isn't it? We won't go there to explain that today. Today, another time. And Pharaoh said something. And Pharaoh will say, the children of Israel, they are entangled in the land. The wilderness has shut them in. They can't get out. Now, Yahuwah says, and I will, in the translation has the word harden. We explain what that means. He will strengthen the heart of Pharaoh, and he shall follow after them. And I will get my honor upon Pharaoh and upon his hosts, and the Egyptians shall know that I am Yahuwah. And the Israelites did what Moses told them to do, what he told them to do. And then, of course, the king was told, right? Wonderful piece of news for him, right? Got him. They're trapped. Now, he sent out his, what is it used today on the Revolutionary Guard? Is that what they use the term today for in the Muslim country? Would they have a group of specifically soldiers? We might call ourselves, we might call them Marines, or we might call them the Green Berets, we might call them the Special Unit, we might call them the Rangers, something like that. The ones who are overwhelmed, they're really, really trained, well trained, they meet any kind of stuff. Well, he called them out along with the rest of his men. And so they're going to go right there, and they're going to kill them. They got an idea, they got them. Now, we say, okay. Verse 9. And the Egyptians pursued after them all the horses and the chariots of Pharaoh, his horsemen and his army, overtook means they didn't pass them up, caught up to them, encamping by the sea. Right in front of that, yes, in front of Baal Shephon. Baal Shephon was the last Elohim for the house of Israel, for the house of Egypt. They had one more god to kill. And that god was killed. How? We'll see. And Pharaoh Junai and the children of Israel lift up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they were afraid. And the children of Israel cried out unto Yahuwah. And he said to Moses, because there is no grave here in the wilderness, and you have taken us in the wilderness, wherefore have thou dealt with us? Verse 13. Now, you could almost hear Moses' voice going up. And he probably yelled to the top of his possible lungs. Fear not, stand still and see the salvation of Yahuwah, which he will work before you today. Whereas you have seen the Egyptians today, you will see them no more, forever. Boy, you could almost hear him, couldn't you? Could you almost hear him just raise his voice? How many things did Moses do to bring them out? How many, that stick and that rod and with Aaron's rod? Tremendous amount of destruction in the entire nation of Israel, of Egypt. And the Israelites were not troubled by it. Now they're afraid.
But you almost tear him.
And Yahuwah will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. Shut up!
Isn't that a word we'd use today?
Now, he's a very powerful man at this point in time in his life, isn't he? Remember, we started out kind of like he was a little scared, afraid, and tired. Now, he's got full power, full authority. He is downright angry. And Yahuwah said to him, "Wherefore you call out to me? Take up your stick. Tell him to go forward. Lift up thy rod. Stretch out thy hand over the sea and divide it. And the children of Israel shall go on the midst of the sea on dry land. I will get my honor upon Pharaoh and upon all his hosts, upon all his chariots and his horsemen. And the Egyptians shall know that I am Yahuwah. And I have gotten me honor upon Pharaoh, upon his chariot, upon the horsemen." Yes, we did. Verse 19. What happened? What happened?
He got them.
What did he do?
He poured the water back over them.
What? No.
No.
What did he do? Who went before the children of Israel, removed and went behind them, the pillar of darkness and the pillar of light in front of them. They never saw the Egyptians again that day. And they have not yet crossed. Right? We're at the Erev part, not the daylight. We are the daylight period of this seventh day. We're talking about what happened last night. So get a picture here. And as we journey through this thing, I want you to try to put yourself as best as you possibly can in the people's shoes. They did not know where they were going. They did not know anything. You have this incredible grace and blessing that the eternal Creator of heaven and earth has given you and has given me. We get to look back. And we get to say, and we have to watch our words, people, all such foolish Israelites, they didn't know where they were going. They didn't see any hope. They didn't see any future. They didn't see any plan. All they saw was there and here. They can't go back. Good as dead. All of a sudden, this cloud moved. You turn around and you can't see the Egyptians anymore. You can't see them. Where are they? Where are they? You know, they're on the dark side. They're on the halfback side of the cloud. They never saw them. So it came and he did something to them. It came between the camp of Egypt and the camp of Israelites, and there was cloud, and the darkness was there. Choshech was there. Yet it gave light. By night thereof. So it was dark, right? Beginning of the darkness, beginning of the evening, of the Erev. And it started suddenly going down, started getting dark for the Israelites. But for the Israelites, guess what? They saw. And now, of course, this wind came through and dried up the land. He caused it to dry up. Strong east wind. You know about the east wind. Everything comes from the east is pretty hot, pretty dangerous. Fascinating, no, because the Messiah is going to come from the east to the west. He comes with a lot of power, a lot of might. He stretched out, Moses stretched out his hand, and a strong wind came back from the east and dried up the land. Now, verse, and the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea upon dry land. It was still what we call Erev part. But they had light. And the waters of the wall were upon the right and left. And the Egyptians pursued them after them. Oh, there it is. See, they saw them. No. Listen very carefully to this next verse. Verse 24. And it came to pass when? When is the morning watch? When the sun rises? When was the morning watch? Morning watch. We're still talking dark, three o'clock at night. Now it's four. Remember when I told you, about the watches? The reason I want you to pay attention to the watches is because the morning watch is really dark out. It either starts at 3 o'clock by what the New Testament says, or it starts maybe, we don't know, everybody's guessing like a horse in the head, and they think it might have been darker, it might start at like midnight. I don't care when it started, it was still dark. It's called the morning watch. Sun's not coming. Sun's on its way coming, but it's not coming yet. Right? And that Yahuwah took forth upon the host of Egyptians through what? What happened here? The pillar of fire and the pillar of cloud. And what did he do? This is a funny translation. It says, and discomforted them. gave them trials. How did he discomfort them? He took off their chariot wheels. Now, remember, the Egyptians, they may be able to, they couldn't even see the Israelites because it was dark for them. But when the turtle moved, the dark cloud, right behind the Israelites, as they were crossing the sea, then the Egyptians could see the pathway. And they saw the sea was open. Now, did they have, were they stupid? Well, you say, of course they were stupid. Not if Baal Shephon was there, the god of the north. God of the north is a god of war. So they would look at it from, oh, it is our Elohim that has divided the water for us so we can go after them. All right? Took two wheels to shear us off and made them drive heavily, albeit as they'd be heavy, so that the Egyptians said, let us flee now. Now, who's fleeing? Remember we had this picture, and sometimes Hollywood makes the Israelites running for their lives? It's the other way around, isn't it? The ones who are fleeing were the Egyptians. So we have a picture here. Now that we have a picture, what is it before I go on? What is it you see? Comments, what did you see? We know that Moses put the water back over them. But what did you see? What took place? What was happening? Please, put yourself in their shoes. They didn't see the water come back right away. What did they see? They saw the other side of the... Oh, we're going to go over there. We're walking through dry land. You know, if you were one of them, what would your mind be thinking? Would you be afraid and terrified, or would you just be, oh, this is amazing?
I'd be wanting to get that water, get on the other side.
You only go at the pace that God is going to set the pace. You don't run ahead of God in anything. Yes, Susan.
Richard, just to go back a little bit to Exodus 14:19. And there's something here that's really quite interesting. In chapter 13, we heard about the pillar of fire by night and the pillar of cloud by day.
Right.
But here it says, and the melech, or the messenger, here translated as angel, but it's the messenger of Elohim.
Right.
Which went before the camp of Israel, removed and went behind them.
Yep.
Now, Paul in 1 Corinthians 10 picks up on this whole theme. But this is possibly... It's the Messiah. It's the messenger of God gets between Israel. If indeed the reference to the Lord of the North as a place, you've actually got it's a conflict between the two of those. if indeed that is Baal.
I will not challenge you. You got a good point there, but I'm just going to read what it said. I agree with you to the point, okay, what you're saying.
Right. Yeah. But my point is this. All of a sudden, we hear about this messenger of God. This is the first time in the narrative that we've heard of this. Before, it was just the fire and the cloud, but now we have the messenger of God.
Yeah. Actually, remember what I told you about an angel supposed to do?
He gives a message.
He carries out the word
the will
Lord.
Of God. Yes.
Okay. And if the word Lord says kill him, then he's going to do it, right?
Yeah. Okay. But really, it's quite interesting, isn't it? Because all of a sudden here, it's the cloud, because it's daytime, but the light of the fire, it is actually an angel. And I think this is the text where Paul picks out about how that rock was Christ.
Yeah, we'll get there today. But we're not there yet. We're just this section of it. You see some pictures. That's great. But I want to ask you about this one. How many people like to be able to comment about what we've seen so far? Is it hard to see? Or is it kind of easy to see? Have you been able to kind of put in your mind how it really was, what it really was like, compared to what you have thought it was like? See, we go to the word of Elohim. We go to the word. We go to Devarim Elohim, find out what it says, and we get a picture of truth. Okay? So a doctrine, some of the things you have or believe, or pictured to believe, have to be removed. Right? Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
All right, let's move quickly. And it says there, verse 30 of that same chapter of Exodus 14, it says, "And Yahuwah saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians." What? What did he do here? What did he do? Out of the Egyptians. Okay. Keep that in mind. Don't try to add anything else to it. When you, in your world, when you come to this point in your life and you have to cross a sea, and we think sometime we cross that sea, it is because of I need to get baptized because, you know, I sin and transgress and all of that kind of stuff. When you went into the water, something didn't come back out. What didn't come back out? Egypt did not come back out. And you saw the dead Egyptians. You must see your dead past. You must visualize and know your dead past and don't hang on to it. Don't try to maneuver and figure out, because past is past. Now we're going to go forward, aren't we? Remember I told you last Sabbath that it's the outgoings that Moses recorded, not the incomings, the outgoings. You're going out from here to there, out from here to there, out from here to there, out from here to there. Keep going, you keep going, you keep going. What does it tell you about your world? You're still going to be going out from one place to another place to another place. And who guides you? Elohim guides you. Right? Now, as we go into this trip, sanctify unto me all the firstborn. Go now to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. First Corinthians chapter 10, verse 1. "Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all of our fathers were under the cloud and passed through the sea. Well, yeah, we know that. All were into Moses and the cloud and in the sea. All ate of the same spiritual food, which is a little bit later. All drank of that same spiritual rock, which they all went to. For they drank of that spiritual rock that was followed them, and it was, the rock was the Messiah. Rock does mean strength and power and might. So let me ask you a question. Who's doing all the damage? The rock. The rock was doing all of it. The rock was bringing forth the plagues. The rock was the one that killed the firstborn. The rock was the one that did this. The rock was the one that did that. The rock followed them. It wasn't in front. They followed him. Okay, go on. I'm right behind you. Keep going. And eliminated the enemy. All right? Got rid of the enemy. And now he went. We'll see how he went ahead of them in the future. We're not there yet. Okay? And they all sat down. And they enjoyed themselves, and they rose up, and they played. We'll get to that one. We're not there yet. That's in the book of Exodus later on. Now, this day, these days of unleavened bread comes to a completion. At the end of our day, it comes to a completion. It comes to an end. What do you do from this point on? Okay. We're going to go and we're going to continue on going on this journey with these people. What did Moses, Apostle Paul say? It is written there for what reason?
For our
admonition, our understanding. Now, the Israelites lived it. They themselves show us. They themselves are. They are our admonition. They lived it. They walked it. They participated in it. They complained. They got angry. God got done with them. They're there for it. God took them through that for one reason, people. To bring us to the end of time. And we have to be careful that we don't look back upon these examples of admonition and examples of what is right and what is wrong and judge against them because they didn't believe in God. For crying out loud, before you came with knowledge of truth, did you really believe in God? Oh yeah, of course I did. Well, no. The truth comes. And then you say, gotta throw that away. Bring us in. Gotta throw that away. Bring us in. These days of unleavened bread. You're throwing out all sorts of doctrines, all sorts of belief systems, and you thought you believed God. But you really didn't believe God. All you did was believe in Him and act upon what someone said. Now you're living in a different world. Now you're living in a world because you can look back at these incredible, I would call them, not even examples. Their lives show us what's going to happen and has happened to us now and what's going to happen to us in the future. This whole picture of this journey, and you will be, God willing, I hope every one of you have met the threshing floor. Hope every one of you have been beaten to where the hull is gone. And you're not amongst the tares, you're not amongst the shafts, you're not amongst the hull. You are now holy unto God. Be you holy because why? I am holy. That takes a long journey, doesn't it? The picture of every holy day and the Messiah doing what he's doing shows us something, but something is very, very important. I'll go on. I'm about ready to try to land right at 3:00. No one's speaking after me, so you're okay. Go to Romans. Chapter 6. Because this is the day of what? Baptism. That which was is now. It doesn't even live on the other side. It ceased to be. It's wiped out. Does not exist anymore. It was destroyed. Verse 1. What say ye then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? I'm not going to go on that subject matter. People heard me about that before. Certainly not. How shall we who died to sin live any longer in it? Or do you not know that as many of us were baptized into Messiah Yahuwah? Messiah Yeshua, were baptized into his death. I know many of you probably got baptized. And when you got baptized, it's probably because you were, sixth chapter of Romans. I'm sorry. The picture here is you are entering into the death of the Messiah. If you enter into your own death, you remain dead. You have to enter into his death. Moreover, when we were buried with him through baptism into death, that just as the Messiah was raised up from the death by the glory of the Father, even so we should walk in newness of life. For we have been united together in the likeness of his death. Certainly we shall be in of his resurrection. Do you remember two apostles that were disciples at this point in time? And they were wanting to be on the right side and the left side.
Yes.
You remember the story?
Yeah.
What did Jesus say to you? Remember? Okay. No, not ask what you ask. This is in Matthew 20, 22, and 23. You don't have to turn there. You don't know what you're asking. But he said, are you able to do something? Are you able to take of the cup that I'm about to drink? I am about to drink. Haven't drunk it yet. About to drink. And be baptized with the baptism I am to be baptized with, in a sense. And he said, and they said, of course, yeah, we will. Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, we'll go along with it. Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. How's it going? I don't know if they said that or not, but I'm just kind of saying these two young men. And he turned to them and says, you indeed will drink my cup and be baptized the baptism that I am baptized with. It's going to cost you your life. Are you ready for your life to be taken? Well, I hope the answer is yes. Because if it's not, you don't partake of his cup. You don't partake of his cup. You're not with him. And his cup was a cup of death, not a cup of life. A cup of death. Romans 6 chapter verse 22. Move ahead real quickly. But now having been set free from sin, become slaves of Elohim, you have your fruit in holiness and the end, everlasting life. Set free from sin. Yes. Set free from it. This is what this day is all about. As you have walked into, quote, the death of the Messiah, you have yet another journey on the road. And as we go through, you're going to see human beings never ever expected to have to face what was going to come upon them. That includes the bitter waters. That includes getting sick and tired of eating the stuff we've got. Complaining. You mean, they lacked faith? Well, Apostle Paul says they lacked faith. Yeah, well, you lack faith. You know why? They didn't have it. God didn't give it. Do you have faith? The reason why you have faith is because God gave it to you. As we go through this, you walk through these people, they didn't have any. Like you didn't have any at one time in your life. You had no idea what God was thinking, what God was doing, where He's taking you. But now you have something back, and you can look at it, and you say, okay. And you know what? We have not yet reached the Ten Commandments yet. An awful lot has yet to happen to us before we reach the threshing floor. Are you ready to meet the threshing floor? They did. They didn't know it. They didn't know the threshing floor. They didn't know they were going to be beat down. They didn't know they were going to have that problem. They didn't know anything. But they're our witnesses to understand Elohim. They are our witnesses to understand Elohim. I want to go to Colossians. Colossians, the first chapter, starting verse 13. You had a comment?
It took a generation of threshing, in a sense, to get rid of the 430 years of things they learned in Egypt that were not of God. In a sense, that's that time of wilderness. It took that much time, and they all died before the next generation could go in.
The 430 years dates back to Abraham when he walked away from his mom and dad. At 430 years from that date, remember the flood? Now we're at 500 years from that date. You add 430 and add 75, you've got a number. It's a fantastic number. Oh, what does it mean? Well, we'll go with that today. And you have to, like, when was the flood? And now? And the exact same day they entered into Egypt, the very same day they left Egypt. Oh my, and we date back, count back, we go to the 430 years at the time of Abraham. Not that they were in there before 400. It is a prophecy that is yet to be understood. Okay? It's a very fantastic story. We won't go there. When Daniel gets into the building of the temple by Solomon, there's a certain date that throws out there. And you're saying, oh, that doesn't make sense. Yeah, it does. We just believe what is written instead of assuming that there's something missing in between. Yes?
I have a question, Richard. So I just would like this clarified. Am I to understand then that they arrived and crossed the Red Sea in conjunction with the seventh day?
In conjunction with the seventh day. Yes.
Right. So that then redemption takes place. Well, it begins with the blood of the Passover lamb.
Yeah, right. It began
and then,
first.
And then the journey to the Red Sea, And then that passing through the waters of deliverance, of being cleansed and delivered, and coming up.
So during, right. So during these 7 days of unleavened bread, what were the Israelites to do?
Press.
Leave everything behind.
Yeah.
Take nothing with you except what I tell you to take with you.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
All their support system, all of their education, all of their hope, all their fantasy, everything they ever thought about ever in the world was gone. Okay? That's what it is with us. When we walk through these days of unleavened bread, we have to know everything must be gone. And don't wish I had it again. You know what I'm saying? The days of unleavened bread means purging out, get and taking in that which is true. Sometimes when the Israelites went through that days of unleavened bread, do you think they felt they were uncomfortable? They were wonderful? They said, well, they're glad we're in the truth. Oh, we're in the glory of the Lord. No, they didn't. And the last thing they did was murmur, right? You're gonna kill us? Right? At this point, this day. But we must look at that and say, if we were there, what would we be doing? We'd probably be murmuring too. Why? Because you don't see where you're going. You weren't supposed to see where you're going. We walk in faith. And our spiritual world, our fleshly world, we walk in. We must walk in faith, knowing, oh, I'm going to go this way. Only God knows what's there in ahead. Do I believe God? Do I trust God? Do I have confidence in God? Yes or no. That's what these days are about. As we journey to the 10, that's what it's all about. And I will tell you, honestly and truthfully, most of you did not know you were heading for the threshing floor. You did not know. You had no knowledge that God was going to thresh you and knock things out of you that you were, quote, blame the devil. Hey, give honor to honor is due. When God beats it out of you, give God the honor of beating it out of you.
Amen.
Don't give credit to anything else. Trying to get here, Colossians. I'm sorry. Colossians chapter 1, starting in verse 13. Who has delivered us from the power of Hosek and has translated us, or transformed us really, into the kingdom of His Son. That's where we're at. In whom we have redemption through the blood, which took place, by the way. When did the blood take place? On the 14th. Took place on the 14th. That's when redemption was. And by the way, when you come and you came to understand that God has redeemed you, you can't just say, oh, I've been redeemed by the Lord. You've got to acknowledge His death. You've got to accept His death. That is the price that He paid, or that He can have you in His world. This is the reason why He says, he who partakes of the Lord's Supper in an unworthy manner will be guilty of the blood of the Messiah. Are those kind of weak words? A bunch of Christian words? Or is it words of power? Telling you, better take seriously what has happened. And even taking these days of unleavened bread and take it seriously, what happened then? And knowing that you are traveling with them, the only thing that God has granted you to see, you know where they were going. But if you were there, you haven't got the foggiest idea. Yeah, you got this green, bright light showing you, but you know, there's no light at the end of the tunnel because you're in the light. What's beyond the light? I just keep following the light. Okay. Who was made in the image of Elohim, the first firstborn of every creature. That's Jesus is the firstborn of every creature. Verse 18. He is the head, the Rashit of the body, the church. Who is the beginning, the Rashit, the firstborn of the dead, that in all things he might have the preeminence. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 23. To the general assembly and the church of the firstborn. Oh, wait. What? What? He got it wrong, right? Have you ever looked at yourself? Because he's neither the male nor female. They're neither Jew nor Gentile. They're neither bond nor is there a slave. You're all one. What's your function? What are you supposed to do? Genesis 49th chapter. What does it say about the firstborn? Wow. Wow. Are you the excellency of his power? Are you the excellency of his strength? Are you the might, beginning of his might? Are you that? We said, no, of course not. Wait a minute. Did God make a mistake calling you into his world? You are related to whom? You're related to the creator of heaven and earth. So once again, how's your father? What's he like? What's it like being a part of him? What's his world like? You understand what I'm saying? I opened up that part, right? What's it like? And, you know, these are hard questions, perhaps. If you think on yourself, you're going to think upon yourself, and all you're going to see, guess what? All you're going to see is sin creeping back instead of truth building you up. It takes truth to have the excellency. It takes truth to have power. It takes truth to be the strength. You don't think you have any power? You don't think you have any strength? What do you think David cried out for much? He knew where his power was. He knew where his strength was. He immediately went to it. Whenever he stumbled and fell, guess what? He went right there. He didn't bawl. He just did it. He knew. And here it says, you are the firstborn. Not the first of the first fruits. You're part of that first ingathering. You're part of the, I'll use this word, you're part of the counting of the Omar. You don't count the Omar. You are being counted in the Omar. You are the Omar. And God is the counting. And it does not decrease, it increases. That's why I said counting the Omar is a red herring. Because we think we are to count it. It is God who's telling us, I have the number. I have the count. And that count's going to last for 50 days. And that count is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. I'm going to bring in the whole crop. And I'm going to thresh that crop on the floor. And I'm going to raise up those and throw up there. That which cannot be moved will not be moved, but that which will be moved will be blown away. I'm just using an analogy here, please. This is why, to me, when I go through these holy days, these times, I see pictures all over the place. Just example after example after example after example of what God does, what God is, and how he does it. When we reach into that day, the 10th day, we go into the 10 commandments, you're going to see, in a sense, please, Every stop along the way that we see in, basically, best I could determine, in the book of Exodus, there was a beating taking place. Bitter water. Bam, bam, bam. You understand what I'm saying? And he says now, with the firstborn of Elohim, the judge, and to the first and to the spirit of the just men made perfect in the past. We are with Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. We are with Joseph. We are part of that family. They are our relatives. They are not a somebody else. They are part of us, and we are part of them. We've been able to be joined with him. We've been joined him with him. Now, they've not been resurrected yet. Well, not as anybody else yet, except the Messiah, because he must have that preeminence. All right. I don't know if I've got anything else to say. Whew. Oh, well, so one more statement. I had in mind, it's impossible to do so. We'll do it on a regular reading. We'll read the whole poem of Moses, but we can't do it today. And there, I want to go to Revelation, the 14th chapter, verse 4. And these are they which are not defiled with women. What that means, basically, they are not committing adultery. They're not getting fornication. They're not polluting it like the Israelites did going into the Promised Land, and Balaam caused them, or caused them, produced to them to have sexual relationship with women who are not of God. Not that hard to figure out. These are the ways to follow the Lamb wherever he goes, and these are redeemed from among the men, the first fruits unto Elohim and to his Lamb. The first fruits. When we reach Pentecost, the very important area there in the prophets, not in the prophets, but what the Messiah said, and also what's written in the book of Leviticus, we will see. All right, so any questions? What is what?
That you just read.
It's a certain number of that will always be with them. They were the ones, my personal opinion, is the ones that are with the Messiah at all times. They will carry out the order. They will teach, they will lead, they will guide, they will show the entire world where what it's all about. When we go to, or we send representatives to Jerusalem, we're going to face these 144,000. They're going to teach. They're going to let us know what's going on. There will always be where the Messiah is at. Where's the Messiah going to be? Is the Messiah going to be in Zion, or is the Messiah going to be in Jerusalem? The word of the Lord comes from where? Jerusalem. Where does the law come forth from? Zion. That's where the Father's at.
What was your last scripture?
4.
14.4,
yeah. I just quoted that one. Any more questions?
Ed and I were talking about the order, I think, this morning. The other thing that kind of came to us was the possibility that in the counting of the Omer, that was the measure that was used for gathering the manna. And each day you gathered manna. Sixth day you gather twice as much, but...
Oh, wait. When we reach the manna, we'll talk about that when that time comes. We're talking about right now when that Omer is to be counted for the 50 days.
Finish my statement.
Okay.
What we came up with as a possibility is in the counting of the Omer could be the same as the days counted, because the daily Omer was your food. It was also a day.
I see. Okay,
towards Pentecost, the 50
days. It's increasing
days.
Daily. I grant you. Yes. That's true, yeah. It's not once a week, it's daily. The count, every 50, why it says 50, count. You can do all the counting all once.